The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy,
it's time to get this party started. It's a footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. Man, we had some tears on the show yesterday.
Yeah.
From Amy Walsh, who's here today. So is Craig Forrest, who had tears all those years ago, back prior to Qatar, when Canada qualified for the World Cup for just a second time. We had Wonga, who has tears every time he looks in the mirror in the morning. And he's a young father, and I know there's always tears in his eyes. Me, I'm just a jaded old, curmudgeonly, unemotional rock, so there's no tears from me. There were plenty of tears yesterday. Plenty of tears yesterday. Canada,
from you?
Its most, well, no, not for me.
No?
I felt it, Craig. I did feel it.
Where did you feel it?
In the loins.
In your loins.
In the loins, I was going to say. That checks, yeah.
It was very arousing. No. I'm not sure that's going to make a...
They're on the rise.
Yes. Rise terms. We'll make it work.
No, there were tears. There were misty eyes in the press box around SoFi Stadium for the most famous victory in the men's program ever. A turning point, a tipping point. We'll get to all of this, but let's just go through all of us how you watched it and how you felt when you saw Stephan Eustachio's thunderous half volley net Canada a berth in the round of 16 of the World Cup. Craig, you're in Seattle.
Yeah,
you think a hotbed for Canadians. There's lots up there. How was your experience, and where did you watch the game?
I think there have been more people on Mars watching the Canada game.
Well, depending on who you believe, that might not necessarily be.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, we got here obviously the night before. Okay, fine. See what's going on in Seattle. I hear it's been pretty good here, but with Canada and South Africa being the only game of the day, it's pretty sleepy downtown Seattle. It really is, just in general. We went looking for the fan zone, and it was like, oh, doesn't appear that there's anybody here.
It's just a zone.
The screen is on. It's just a zone.
Or a fan zone. A fan zone. Craig being the fan.
Yeah. So then we went to a couple of those bars.
Gregor, it's one of those old CRT televisions that we had with the, you had to change the UHF, and that's UHF. What they set up.
pretty much. So we tried a couple bars, and we knocked on the door. We're like, are you open? No. Looked in a window one place. Open? No. We finally found a place with nobody in it. Massive place, very close to the stadium. And they were open, and they were going to have the game on. And we sat there, and about 10 people maybe were in there. Got a few Americans, actually. They were cheering hard for Canada. Hmm. I think they're fans of Jesse Marsh.
Nice to hear.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then after the game, walking along the boardwalk, there was maybe five, six Canadian jerseys that I saw. So we were just walking by, giving high fives, way to go, and go Canada. And yeah, so that was it. I mean, it was kind of disappointing because you wanted to celebrate with other people, and it was just me and David Stowell. That he's now a kind of, he's English, but he's on the Canadian bandwagon. So we'll take it. Everybody's kid on the bandwagon. We're all for it.
Absolutely. Right. Dubs, your experience watching it, where were you?
I was at CBC because we were recording a CBC digital reaction show immediately following, but I got to watch it with people, which was good because I think I needed the emotional and mental support during that match because I was, listen, I said yesterday on the podcast, the longer it stayed nil-nil, the more it favored South Africa. Mm-hmm. And I think you felt that a little bit. And I think you felt it with Canada and the lack of that clinical edge that reared its ugly head again. So I was just hanging on kind of myself, you know, and you could feel almost that tension coming through the screen from the Canadian contingent. And so when Eustachio scored, I think everybody was resigned to that point that it was going to extra time. That was the feeling of the contest. Cause listen, Canada were not at their best. But I think we'll talk about this. We'll dive into the game. But like Davies made a real difference. Nico Seguir made a real difference. So again, the subs were utilized, I think, very well by Jesse Marsh. And they were pushing. But never did I really think that there was a goal coming. And for it to land on the chest just brilliantly of Stephen Eustachio. And then when that went in, it just seemed poetic and fitting that it was the guy who doesn't wear the armband, but looks like the leader of this squad, of this bunch, that it fell to him and he's the hero on the day. Like I got up and I ran around CBC and then I ended up kind of colliding with Shireen in kind of an awkward embrace. And she was wearing this really big red ring and she ripped out a chunk of my hair.
Oh no.
Yeah.
That's
but
what
I
that
didn't
is.
Even really, I did. Oh yeah, that's right. It's right over there. It's a little bit of a bald patch, but I'm okay. But it was elation, but it was also relief because as favorites, they were meant to do it and the game didn't really show that, but they showed up when they needed to. And that's what knockout football is all about, is you just got to get the result. And Canada were able to do that. So I was able to watch it like with Donovan and Shireen and John Grant, the producer. Zoho was there helping with socials. And it was just great to feel that. It would have loved to have been down at Canada House again, but it wasn't to be. But I think you could feel the energy. Even when I stepped out to go down to Billy Bishop to take my flight back home, the streets in Toronto, everybody was still buzzing. Tons of jerseys, you know, tons of people out. And I think you're really starting to see the shift because you mentioned the tipping point charms. Like you could feel it kind of, as I said, like from Jesse Marsh and from everybody in the reaction and how jubilant it was. But you're also seeing that in the fan base. And you're, well, even though that wasn't in Seattle for us, but I think you're feeling that in Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. There's a buzz. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can feel it. It's tangible.
Wonga, where there's a buzz. I think there's a buzz right now, too.
Yeah, I
know. Can you hear that?
I wonder if it's sometimes when the air conditioning unit kicks in.
Oh.
It can do some weird things to mics.
Oh,
the electrical signal.
Well, why don't we just sometimes try this and let's see. Yes, that's better. And just so everyone knows, there's been a lot of name dropping. Craig is in Seattle right now with Dave Stowell covering FIFA, so everyone knows why he's there. Shireen, Ahmed, and Donovan Bennett are CBC journalists who Amy works with doing the NSL, the digital match, all of that kind of stuff. Just so people
Shireen
understand.
Shireen is also a host of the broadcast.
Of course,
yes,
she is.
Yes, JC, love it.
Yes, but I just wanted to give people who are joining us for the first time, when we're name dropping, just a reminder to our team to mention their whole names and why they're there. That's all.
So Wonga, where were you?
Oh, I was in the backyard. I was waiting for the girls to decide whether or not they were going to come down. My buddy Sugar, who are friends with Craig and I, he had texted me because I said, hey, I might want to head down with Jimmy to go to the Canada House. And instead, Sugar texted me and said, I'm barely getting in. I don't know if I'm going to get in. So it was jammed down there, as Dubs probably saw. And so I just watched by myself on the deck in the backyard. I put a TV outside. What's amazing about it is when they scored, I was standing up and I screamed and I went, yeah. And I scared the crap out of my next door neighbor who was having a smoke on the back. And I went, they just won, Jeannie. And I said, I'm sorry. And then I screamed again.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show. I was texting with our friend from Footy Prime supporters, Carrie Ryan, and I just said, I'm so relieved. It was such an uncomfortable game to watch, wasn't it? I was sitting there going, missed opportunity after missed opportunity, balls going awry, not sharp, and then a difference maker came in, which was not really on his play, but on his attention, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But it was more, and then Dubs and I were texting on our way home, and I was just like, I'm so relieved. And that, and also through the lens of Footy Prime, so happy. We've got another week of this. Great numbers. Number three in the country. Number one in the for podcasts in Canada. But it allows us to keep talking all along until we get to next Saturday for now. And that means we'll also have a show next Monday, whatever that show is, right? Like whether they win or lose. We're going to continue. So, Charms wants to say something.
A slight aside here about the podcast rankings.
Yeah.
So I went to, last night, I went to Santa Monica to a pub there to do a little interview with BBC Five Live.
And, it's a bit of a flex. Well done, Charms.
Yeah, I know. It all works out. I have to say that for context, because they have a really, obviously, a massive podcast stable, right? Five Live, and their huge Fighting Talk was the guy that hosts Fighting Talk, which is a brilliant show once a week. Was the interview, but about midway through he starts laughing and he starts referring to, our producer went for dinner just now, I just came back, and he's brought with him Football Weekly from The Guardian. and Football Weekly is as great as we are, and we are great, right? Number one is, generally speaking, Football Weekly, The Guardian. They've been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those guys walked into the bar, and it was obviously kind of rivals, BBC and The Guardian, but they're all mates. It was quite amusing. And I thought, I've got an opportunity here to kill two birds with one stone. Right? I could really help our rankings each week by going a little bit postal.
Mm.
But I didn't. So anyway, that was amusing. Sorry, back to the game, more importantly. Mm-hmm. I thought it was amusing, though, just from a selfish standpoint. It wasn't a great game.
It was like if an airplane crashed with the team on it, right? Yeah. Yay, we're number one.
Well, it's like today, right? Netherlands, Morocco today. If there's some terrible injuries today, it wouldn't be horrible.
Okay. We don't want to go down this road.
I do.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, Hakimi did his hammy. What a shame. No, a couple of red cards, right?
You know, this is
all going to help Canada. But listen, it wasn't a great game. In fact, it was a poor game. And that's just fine, Craig. This is knockout football at the World Cup. I mentioned it a few times on socials yesterday. Wow, that's a buzz. Often at knockout games and World Cups, they're defined by moments. And we remember, that classic because of a moment late in the game. That the previous 90 minutes can often be poor, bad, cagey, nervy, which this seemed to be. One team wanting to play football to a certain point, one team not wanting to play football whatsoever. And in the end, it's defined by that moment. In this case, it's Stefan Eustachio, and everyone's happy, right? People complaining, saying, well, Canada were terrible. It's like, well, that's a bit of a stretch. They weren't terrible. But at the same time, who cares? They found a way to get through. And how many times have we said in this very podcast, good teams find a way? And that's what happened. But before we get to that, and I want to hear from Craig and Dubs on both that, having played in those types of matches. JC, there's a little something we need to hear from you.
It's the World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by our friends at Tim Hortons. It's game on with Sims.
All right, Craig. So crap games at World Cups. It's just nature of the beast, isn't it? And it's quite all right. Is that fair to say?
Yes and no. I mean, I think we've seen this story before with Canada. Okay, you didn't find the wins. We found the goal that we needed to win. But there's a trend here that has to stop. When we get up against the winners of Morocco or Netherlands, you're going to get maybe one, two really good chances, and you have to bury them. It's just the bottom line. If you don't bury them, you're going to find your way out, and we're going to be talking about missed chances again. So that has to change. We know it can, but it has to be better. There's just no question about it. But yeah, you can grind out results. We'll see. We're going to see teams that in this round of 32 for sure that are going to fail. Somebody's going to go out in games that they think they should win. So on the back of that, with the pressures and everything else that comes with it, you have to credit them for getting the job done. Better late than never. But what a whole stack of chances. I mean, in the empty bar, I was like, I don't know what chance it was, but it just there were so many. I was just like, fa. It was like echoing around this empty bar. Fa, 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 fa.
Yeah, I think that was everybody. Like, he felt the reverberations of, you know, like the hands up to the head and like the arms wide open, or like the expletives, whatever it was. I think everybody was feeling that. Like, how great was Eustachio on a set pieces? Because whereas tame as Canada were and sloppy and disjointed, like there was little to no attacking fluency. Like they were untidy. There was a lack of connection. There was a lack of menace just in general in the final third, but you were still able to get three big chances in the first half. And also credit to the South African defenders, right? Like Madiba, especially the first one. And then Jonathan David, the lack of urgency to not lunge for that ball. What's like that was so perplexing to me. And there were a couple of occasions as well where he received the ball and it's almost like he had his blinders on this game for a guy who's so intelligent, plays such a clever kind of wily game. He seemed to not have an idea of what was going on around him. Like there was a lack of awareness in the way that he was playing and like what was going to come next, like thinking ahead, there was no foresight to the way he was playing. But yeah, to Forrest's point, for the team to play poorly, to not really generate the threat from the wide areas, which we normally do quite well. Like there was times where both Tejon and Liam Miller had the early cross on and didn't whip it in. And the moment kind of passed them by, but you're still able to, from dead balls, like the header with Derek Cornelius. Like
you got to score that, right?
That has to go in. And if that goes in, that changes the entire complexion of the game, right? But we won't go back and say like, what if, what if, what if. But to Forrest's point, you cannot play your best and you can still be clinical when those moments are gifted to you, when they're there for you on the platter. But I still do think, to kind of back up a little bit, that there's a lesson to be had in this, is that, you know, in World Cups, it like my point about Ancelotti, like it doesn't matter if you're not playing the beautiful game or beautiful football, or you looked at that team through the first 75 minutes. Would you have any idea what Canada's identity is under Jesse Marsh? I don't think you would necessarily. Fits and starts. You saw like some
started
vertical
off that way, don't you think? They started off pressing really aggressively and then it kind of stopped.
Yes, but then you saw their foot come off the gas when South Africa was able to solve it, where you had, Apolice was very good for them, dropping off the line, finding space in between the midfield and the back line. There was acres of space there for them to operate. So whether they were finding that from the center backs that were splitting and the fullbacks were going high, or it was direct from the goalkeeper finding him to feet in order to break two lines of pressure, they were solving it to a certain degree. And then you saw Canada shift after the hydration break to more of a mid block. And then you saw them resemble themselves a little bit more. And I think you saw it in moments as well, where you saw the verticality, you saw the intent, where you saw Eustachio find the feet of Tanny Oluwaseh, took a good touch because I thought Tanny was very sloppy, wasn't able to really link up and keep possession. But then he finds with one touch the feet of Jonathan David, who sprays it wide and finds Liam Miller into space. And then all of a sudden, like, okay, here we go. But then it was killed again by a poor touch and like a ball. How many balls went from our center backs out to touch? right? When you're looking for like either Richie or Alistair Johnson going high. So listen, I'm not going to shit all over the team, because in the end, you found a way to win. And my point that I'm trying to make is, you look at the group stages and we've broken it down. They're chasing something versus Bosnia. They get the point. They get something out of the game with the Kyle Aaron goal. They absolutely destroy an opponent, roll over Qatar. They're so dominating. There's something to be pulled from that. The sense of urgency they showed versus the Swiss, where if they'd played like that, maybe they could have topped the group. And then in the round of 32, so the first team to ever win a game in a round of 32, should be said, right? The lone game on the docket yesterday. So there are tons of eyeballs, maybe not in Seattle, trained on this Canadian men's national team.
Imagine the audience globally. Right?
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. So there's two positives to pull from that, is you're able to win a game when you're not at your best. You find a way. Right. And then also people are like, this is Canada. That was Canada not at their best, and they're still able to get the result. Mm. They're going through. Now you get the extra rest. We're going to get to Fonzie. I know we are, but he's able to be a game breaker where he never put it into fifth gear. He looked tentative, but he was still able to pull attention, create space for others just by his mere presence. So Canada, I think, will still be able to surprise, because listen, these teams, whether it's the Dutch or it's Morocco, they'll do their homework. They know what Canada is under Jesse Marsh. But I think what Canada showed was not their full hand. So hopefully they'll have that in their back pocket for whoever they end up facing in the round of 16.
You made a good point, Charles, like the only game in town, like in the whole world, everybody can get enough of this World Cup, and it's Canada alone. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, our football team is like headlines around the world. It's nuts.
It's crazy. There's how many great podcasts aside from ours are out there for the World Cup? There's dozens from the biggest broadcasting companies with the biggest names in the world. Not as good as ours, but there's lots of them. And they're all talking about Canada.
They should all get on a plane. Heading to the Bermuda Triangle. Every one of those.
There are plenty of conspiracy theory podcasts out there as well. Yeah, you don't need to be that.
But the fact is, they're all talking about Canada as their lead today.
Yes.
Because there was one game yesterday. That's amazing.
It's huge.
Right? What a moment for globally for the recognition of this. And listen, we're going to talk about the celebration and we're really happy and what it means, yada yada, but it's also important to us to break down this game and acknowledge that it wasn't the best game by Jesse Marsh's side. There were at times some passengers out there, right? But these games are the games Canada hates playing against teams like South Africa, which is why it's kind of ironic that the next game, where there'll be massive underdogs, they'll be far more comfortable playing against the Dutch or the Moroccans, because they won't be on the front foot with the ball. They'll be on the front foot trying to win the ball. But it's really a weird thing. And they might not win that game. And it's still a glorious World Cup. But the pressure on these guys' shoulders, I think, for this match, Craig, from a Canadian perspective, as much as Canadian footballers have pressure, they do. Had they lost that game, this World Cup seen as a big disappointment, despite making it to the round of 32. By the way, every World Cup team's made the round of 32 before. Just saying. Actually, it's 24 teams once upon a time, because there was 32 teams in the World Cup. I'm being pedantic.
Yeah.
Yes. But, and the argument there, like, I don't really have a ton of time for it. It's like people wanting, they have the programmed tweet ready to go, right? And I'm just like, it is not the same thing, just because the World Cup used to be a clash and it used to be groups of four and it was a 32 team World Cup. It's not the same thing. It really is not. Like the sense of jeopardy we've been talking about in the group stages and how that's lost a little bit and is stats padding. And like it changes completely when you're in a game where there is everything on the line. It's apples to oranges. You can't compare it. Stop it.
Stop, everyone. Stop. You've been put in your place by Dubs there. But Craig, yeah, I mean, I think all valid points. And it's okay to analyze and to critique and to say where they got to improve, but they did guts it out and they found a way. Let's go a bit more macro here. Moise Bembido gets a start, plays an hour. Your thoughts on his performance beside Derek Cornelius at the back?
I thought that all things considered, he did very well. The lack of playing time for some of these players stepping in is a worry. But he, I thought he was very good actually under the circumstances. Wasn't under a ton of pressure, I didn't think either, right? I mean, they, South Africa, you know, they're not that great.
But he showed his pace at times, right? He had to show his pace. I thought he was moving well out there.
Yeah.
By the way, to give some credit to Luke de Vigerol when he came on, I thought he was outstanding again. He made some huge interceptions and a couple of huge tackles. And obviously he had to play half an hour there, right?
He did what he's been doing, Sharms.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you were done there. But,
no, I was done. It's one of those lazy,
a pregnant pause, a la Jimmy Brennan.
Today's got a big pregnant pause from Jimmy.
He's barely spoken. Right. I know. You okay, Jimmy? Oh no, his mic must not be working. No, I think it was important for Moyes to get the start because you understand that the greatest threat that South Africa posed, and I think they had the ball more than we expected them to, was on the break. And I think you saw, to your point, Sharms, you saw the explosiveness, you saw the pace, you saw the control that Canada had with somebody like Moyes back there. I still think like what Forrest is saying about the lack of competitive minutes, you saw it in him, and he also saw it at times with Derek Cornelius, just on the timing. Even if it's the header that he misses, he misjudges it. He thinks the goalkeeper is going to come out to challenge him, perhaps. That's why he leaps. You know, but it just missed opportunities the one way, but then also defensively. Like Jimmy talked about the partnership there and like how that's the trusted combination, the trusted tandem at center back under Jesse Marsh. So I think that's why he goes, but also the pace. But I just think, and also he gives a chance to rest a de Fougerol. His role, and maybe Kyle Larens, you know, was maybe he's a sub for Jonathan David if you go to extra time, right? Even though you maybe want to keep David on for the pen if you're thinking that you're projecting forward, which you are, because you know that there's plans for this, you know, plan A and B and C, which I think Jesse Mars probably had, which is good. But that's why I think Laren doesn't get subbed in earlier. But I think de Fougerol, the plan was, listen, Moyes is going to start. It's not an indictment of your performance because you've been outstanding for us, but we need you to come on and we need you to be the finisher. We need you to be punishing. And he was. Like, he played 30 minutes. He won 100% of his ground duels. There's only three, but he won them all. All of his aerial duels, recoveries, tackles, clearances. And even in terms of his progression and the way that Canada looked better on the ball, it was a combination of things. It was Nico Seguir, and I hope that we talk about him a little bit more because he's not been utilized very much, and he made a huge difference when he got subbed in for Nathan Saliba. And he gave a lift to Stephen Eustachio, who was looking a little bit tired at that point. And I think that Davies being subbed in as well, but all of a sudden Canada had more confidence on the ball. I think that was part and parcel with Luke de Fougerol getting subbed in.
I mean, is there a conversation there, Craig, to be had ahead of Netherlands or Morocco about de Fougerol getting the start? I don't think there is. I think it's going to be DC and Bumbido again. But it's at least it's a conversation. I'm sure in that coach's room they say, you know what? This kid again has stepped in, and yeah, he's looking a bit tired, but he's now got a week off between games. Do we? Would you? Or is it still a bad experience?
I think he likes that tandem, and I get it. Yeah, I don't see that actually happening if they're both healthy and ready to go. I think that, it's great that we have that depth in that position. And it was somewhat unexpected, maybe, you know, that, you know, de Fougerol, I mean, Fulham's all over this, but he's never played a Premier League game. Like, he's all of a sudden becoming a real asset to Fulham. And so he should be. He's been there since he was like a toddler. He's really part of the fabric of Fulham Football Club as far as their development goes, and he's done really well. A great kid. And if he's needed, we know what he's going to do, and he's been consistently very good, which is great to see for the back line.
And while we're talking about Luke de Fougerol,
Luke,
JC and I put up best of our interviews, and Luke was profiled in one of our interviews a couple weeks ago. So jump back into our podcast crates and into our milk crates and go listen to that, just FYI.
That was pre-muscle, Luke, as well.
Oh, it was pre-muscle.
That's right.
Jeez. Yeah. Sorry, definitely interrupted you.
What is the wiry Luke then?
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was.
And now he's like, he's got some beef on him. Jesus, yeah. he's a big boy. He is.
Yeah. Neck.
His hashtag neck. Gains. Okay. That's what the kids say.
He ain't missing leg day, I tell you that much.
Yeah, that's right. Not missing gym day. Like he looks gym like day. A professional.
We're unfortunately, aren't we? But
we're yeah. missing gym day. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks like there's always been a maturity to his game, but now he looks like a mature player.
He does.
Right? So I yeah, think it's surprising to everybody to realize that he's just a 20-year-old kid, especially given the position that he's playing.
Center back, right? Yeah, explain that. I mean, Craig, center backs, they generally blossom like goalkeepers, not quite as late as goalkeepers, but they blossom a little bit later. You don't often get 20-year-old kids making their mark in the World Cup.
No, you don't. That's a good point. I mean, when you think about Virgil van Dijk, when he moved to Liverpool, you know, he wasn't a 20-year-old. He was a seasoned veteran, if you like, you know, and a proven veteran through other means. And then they pick him up at 20 years old, a center back position is just, it's unheard of virtually, you know, because of that experience that you need.
Did you say virtually?
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, and we talked about it last week about his next move is probably it makes sense to go to say a league championship team on loan from Fulham, but hell, I mean, if you're Fulham right now, you bring him to camp and have a look, don't you? You know, I mean, yeah. I don't want to get pump his tires too much, just keep his feet on the ground, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's listening to this.
Yeah, he always does. Yeah. He texted me last night, the whole team.
No, but it would be a silly correlation to make, but you look, Sharms, I think you maybe mentioned this on the pod last week or the week before. We were talking about Luke, and listen, we've always been on the Luke de Fougerolle train, it should be said. You know, like we knew that this kid, given the injury to Alfie Jones, and that's something else that his play has allowed Jesse Marsh to kind of forget, is like you don't have to focus on that so much, because a healthy Alfie Jones would have changed the dynamic at play with how you're utilizing your center backs and how you're using that depth, right, for the rhythm and competitive minutes, the way that he's balanced that with Moyes, where you still see a little bit of the rust, but it's less of a concern when you know you have somebody of Luke's quality coming off the bench. But my earlier point just about Fulham, like he's all over their socials, right? Mm-hmm. So like a team that maybe didn't value him or see him as part of the puzzle and fitting in, maybe not next year, but eventually, I don't know if it would be blasted so much all over their socials.
Yeah. Well, he's got a new manager there this year as well. Not that Marcus Silva was anti-Luke de Fougerolle. They did the right thing. They developed him beautifully, actually, it seems. You can't criticize him. This is a young guy who's been loaned out to lower division football to find his confidence, and now look what they have with him. Anyway, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. You mentioned Nico Seguir. I think it's fascinating, this one, in that Jesse Marsh has been saying from day one he's a cultured European footballer. He loves him in midfield. But with Johnston's injury, he hasn't had a chance to see him in midfield, really, very, very few minutes until yesterday. He brings him on in the center of the park, and I do wonder if he saw enough to start him against the Dutch or Morocco alongside Stefan Eustachio. Because as Saliba was okay, he hasn't stood out though since the goal. And I think there's definitely a conversation there, another conversation, lots of conversations that you start Nico Seguir, Craig, in the center of park in that match.
Yeah, well, he certainly did enough to ask the questions, knocking on the door of Jesse Marsh. I'd be hanging around his hotel room, doing stretches outside his room. Hey, Jesse, how you doing?
Yeah. There's something to that, though. Like Jimmy's talked about it, right? When you're a sub on the bench in game, just making yourself visible. And I remember doing the same thing, like where I was playing really well and I was trying to climb my way back into the starting 11. If I wasn't starting, I probably wasn't being utilized as a deeper lying midfielder, right? Somebody in front of me was probably getting 90 minutes or thereabouts, and I wasn't the first sub. So if I wasn't catching somebody's eye, you know, that I probably wasn't getting put in. So there's something to that for us. Like maybe he's a little bit more active, like team walks, hanging back, like near the technical staff, grabbing dinner, choosing his spot wisely.
Annoying, you were annoying, weren't you?
100%.
But there's a term in sales called top of mind awareness, TOMA. And when you're sitting on the bench, your job is to make sure that people remember you and that you're top of mind. Mm. And if you're not getting that start, there's a reason, whether it's a start me. Right? Like you have to put yourself in a position that they know you are not only angling you're painstakingly, annoyingly ready to be on the pitch, on the field, off the bench. Get me the fuck off the bench. That's what you, right?
Yeah, but Stephen Eustachio will also have a say. Sorry, Forrest. Like as a leader, as a voice in Jesse Marsh's, what's that?
I just said 36-34.
Oh, yeah. Well done.
Sorry. Well sorry, played. Everybody out in radio land.
That's okay. But, you know, Jesse Marsh will have an idea. And obviously, you know, his technical staff will be consulted and it'll be their decision. But he might also be influenced by the likes of Stephen Eustachio for what he prefers, what he saw. And I'm sure he enjoys the different midfielders that flank him for their different qualities and maybe different tactical approaches that you might have, be it Morocco or the Dutch. But like that will have a lot of influence. Like I remember Sink, Christine Sinclair, sorry, Wanger, there we go. I offered context. Mm-hmm. When Melissa Tancredi was maybe not the leading candidate to be the other striker with Sinky, Sinky pushed to have Tank as her partner, as her strike partner. And like those guys went on to be like a really prolific scoring duo for our women's national team. And that was basically pushed by Sink. I mean, obviously the coaches saw the upside to Melissa Tancredi as well, but there were other candidates. There were other possibilities. But Sinky really loved playing with Sink and she made that known. And that was for, you know, for the most of, I don't know what era that would have been, but maybe around like 2016-ish, like the mid-2000s, then like it was, if Sink had a say in it, and she often did, it was Melissa Tancredi that was lining up next to her. Mm.
Do you think John David's preferred partner is Carl Aaron? They have the history there. And for Saturday, I mean, we, regardless of who it is, I mean, let's be honest, I think the selection for Holland will be very similar to Morocco. Mm-hmm. Do you expect to see Carl Aaron back in there, Craig, for that type of match? Or do you still want that press, that athleticism and speed of Tanny Alouache to get that ball back in dangerous areas?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I got to say, Jonathan David, average. I mean, if you were going to pick a player on that team, again, that you didn't know played for Juventus, you'd be like, it wouldn't be JD.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Like, it's just
you're right.
You know, even Tejon, like he hasn't been close to his best yet.
No.
I think he's gone 13 games without an assist or a goal. That's, you know, that has
I had high hopes. Didn't you see the first probably 5-10 minutes of Tejon? I think, oh, Tejon's back. Mm-hmm. He was just at it. I thought, okay, he's back. But then he drifted out of the game again.
Yeah. And Tanny, I don't know. He's just not, he doesn't seem to be. He closes down. He was athletic, but is he going to score? It just doesn't seem to be at that level. Doesn't seem to be able to consistently get opportunities and not scoring. And then Promise David comes on, and you know he was running around. He was working hard, doing his thing, but you know a little more composure needed on the ball. There was some support in one play. He took a shot. Whereas he had support, somebody was running on the right side. I can't remember who it was. Lay him in. Not to say he was going to score, but it would have been a higher percentage opportunity. Mm-hmm. So the frustration up top that we said that needs to change and they need to be extremely improved for the next match.
Yeah, well, there was like a real lack of cohesion, I think.
There really was. And like you said, it got to a point where you didn't really know what they were doing. It just seemed, you know, yeah, fits and starts. Like I don't know what they're planning, and it just seemed to get more frustrating as the game went on. And thank goodness for Eustachio to bang that one in late.
Mm-hmm. How much of that was South Africa and the way they set up?
Oh, they created five really good chances.
It could have been 3-0 at the half. I mean, whatever. It wasn't.
Yeah, every
penalty call. Yeah. Derek's DC's header, which should have gone in. We had the Tejon and Bambido off the line. Like, yeah. It could have been a different story entirely at the half, but it wasn't. Bottom line. But beyond that, there wasn't much going at all.
I don't know. Can we talk about Kyle Larin not playing yesterday? Was that confusing to... It was confusing to me. It wasn't confusing to you guys?
No, because I made the earlier point that I think the plan was, and I mean, who knows if this is what was happening internally, but I think he was the sub for Jonathan David if this game, which it looked like was headed for extra time, if you needed like as a tired... So just
on a management side,
yeah,
you were thinking, hey, if this goes another 30, if it's 30 now, right? 215s?
Yep.
Okay. So this goes another 30. They're bringing in Kyle Larin like right at extra, not at extra time. Sorry. What's it called? Golden time. I don't know what you want to call
it. No, you had it with extra time.
Okay. Yeah. So that extra time, sorry, I just get confused sometimes with the terminology. They were going to bring him. So it was more of a management play than it was. You're not going on.
I think that was interesting.
I think he had that in the back of his mind, and why we didn't see that change earlier is because he was planning that it looks as though we're going to extra time.
He's playing chess instead of checkers, right?
Yep.
At that point.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I also think though, Kyle Larin did not look great versus the Swiss.
No.
And so I think he's parked on the bench. I think you needed Tanny to run down the South African back line and put them under pressure, which I think he maybe looked effective in the beginning of the game. So that's why I think he probably, to your earlier question, Sharms, to move off Kyle for a second, I don't think he was punished, but I just don't think he had that in him to be effective. So that's why you go with Tanny, because you saw Tanny on the ball and like the quality just wasn't there. Like whenever Canada was able to break, you saw Liam Miller a couple times get the ball and first touch letting him down. And like the play was slowed instead of being accelerated. But out of possession, I think it does the job. So like if, you know, whether it's the Dutch or whether it's Morocco, you're going to be out of possession. You're going to have to look to hit on the break faster. And I think you probably start with Tanny again and bring on a promise. But what we haven't talked about is the quality of that pitch. Was this a footwear thing? Was this a pitch thing?
Slipping
there
everywhere.
Were so many slips by players. Okay. Alistair Johnston, I think probably in the first 20 minutes, slipped three times.
Tejan had a really
Tejan, yes, yeah, defensively.
Yeah.
That led to a shot that just missed to Max's left. And that, seeing it on the replays, that was much closer than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thing is about Tanny.
He got closer every time.
Every replay. The thing about Tanny is it's very well starting him again, but to be effective, you have to have Jonathan David in top gear. Mm-hmm. You just have to. You can't have Jonathan David, I want to say he's never floating. He's always working hard, but not doing Jonathan David things when you have Tanny, because you have to have that presence and that clinical edge, which Tanny just doesn't offer. And Carl, speak to Carl, he's one of those players that you just don't notice, and then suddenly he pops up and scores a huge goal. That's what Kyle does. Very different players. I thought it was interesting that they brought Promise David on before Kyle to try and mix things up. But I think you're right. He's probably looking ahead to extra time and what might happen there. Mm-hmm. Although taking John David off ahead of potential penalties would be a ballsy call. That better work out. Otherwise, you're criticized forever.
Yeah, but maybe at that point, it's not for a tired Jonathan David. I know I'm contradicting myself. Maybe it's a, you know what, it's a tactical thing. You're bringing off a defender and you're bringing on
Just
at the very end, right?
Yeah.
Which makes sense. But I want to go back to Sigur, because we kind of glossed over the midfield a little bit. So I think Saliba, he was okay. I thought he was uneven. You saw him at times like driving the space the way that he does, and he's able to do like that real box-to-box profile that he is, that evokes a little bit of what Kone brings to this men's national team. But it was few and far between, and other times he was losing the ball in central areas, and then South Africa was able to get on their bikes and go quick the other way. So I think you bring Nico Sigur on. I think he comes on right around the hour mark. And what he offered was a player, and it was also the game state at that point, but we were able to get in behind through some perfectly weighted passes, and he's looking to be incisive and to go very direct and vertical. And you saw Tanny get an opportunity off the back of one of Sigur's passes. You saw another occasion where I think it was Sigur, maybe it was Eustachio at that point, that found Davies, because I'm sure we're going to talk about Davies. We haven't really talked about him. And then Davies plays the early ball that the game had been crying out for. And then that's when you get Jonathan David, where you think, okay, surely he's going to lunge at this. He's a diving header, like Robin Van Persie this shit, right? Like do something where you just get right in front of that ball and that defender. But again, you allow the South African defender to come up with a worldie of a save, like this fabulous defensive effort where, again, that should have been a goal. But I thought Nico Sticker.
Is it confidence?
I don't know what it is, but it, to me, it just looked again like a lack of awareness of where you are in the pitch and a lack of urgency in the moment. He really did not look like himself.
We have to remove the Qatar game almost from the equation, don't you think? With judging performances, because it's a weird game and they're brilliant and they were clinical and ruthless, did everything that was necessary. So taking nothing away from them. But if you remove that 90 minutes from the whole World Cup story, there are some concerns here, Craig. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they demolished a poor side down to 9 players.
Yeah.
Which they're supposed to do.
Yeah. So outside of that, hasn't shown an awful lot.
But you don't drop him, obviously. I still think that we'll go over this before, you know, one of the next podcasts. We'll go through the 11s. I think Segura gets in there. I really do. And that's so before the World Cup, that's a surprise. Obviously, no one foresaw the Kone situation. Fonzie, got to talk about Fonzie coming on. And listen, I think after a while, they put two markers on him and kind of took him out of the game. He gave the ball away a little bit. But the first probably 5-10 minutes, you just saw the quality that no one else brings. It's like, oh, yeah, that's why they're better with Alphonso Davies in the side. It's been a long time, right? It was March last year on this very ground that he did his ACL. First time. And thank Christ we can now just put to bed, Craig, this narrative about Alphonso Davies' role with his squad. Okay, he can play now. Maybe not many minutes, but he can play.
Yeah. When he came on, you could just tell that this – he's a Bayern Munich player. You know, he's at the top echelon of this game. And even without the playing time, you could just see the attention he drew, the pace that he still has, the vision, all these sort of things. Where do you play him? Like, I mean, this is the thing, because he does do so well offensively, but he can get you out of trouble defensively like nobody else in our squad. But it was interesting to see him come on and go, oh, okay. All right, this guy's got quality that you can tell that is beyond what we have, and that's a good thing. I mean, we've got to that stage now where this is what they're hoping for, right? Get to the round of 16 somehow, and have Fonzie fit available in some capacity. So that's really good news. Good news for him. Good news for the squad. The whole vibe, excellent. You know, I think it's absolutely brilliant. So they're in a good spot with him.
But can you get half an hour out of him, Dubs? That's the question, right? Next game, you might need half an hour, not 15 minutes.
I've seen people say, well, he must be starting next game. Like, did you watch him play? Because it was clear that this is a guy who's able to contribute and he does his job in that he strikes fear into the opponent. Like, this was the name drop and this is the player dropped into this game and to do exactly what he was billed to do, which is to draw attention. And embrace the decoy because that's what he did.
Is Fonzie like Canada Soccer's Wonga's World Cup draw? The drop.
Yes. You know?
Yeah, you bring it in when you need it just to go, wow.
That's right. You did that? Wow, you were really? At the draw?
I forgot about that.
Yeah. He's quite literal. He's like the ace up the sleeve. So listen, you knew what you had, right? Dubs, so you use it to full effectiveness.
To your point about the decoy, he didn't open it up once yesterday. He didn't sprint more than he never sprinted.
He got beaten actually in the outside a couple of times.
Yeah, I think. But it was never like he never got to 100, right? Like Fonzie 100. But the way he impacted the match just by being that decoy, the duck in the corner with a Fonzie head, and they go, we have to put two people on this. And you were talking about Nico Seguir. All of a sudden, he's got space to move the ball up. All of a sudden, there's alleyways and space. And I just kind of go, this is what this guy does. So to Craig's point, even the myth of Fonzie at Bayern Munich changes the game. It literally changes the game. And you saw it. If anybody sat there and said, oh my God, this guy did nothing out there, they are not watching the same match because he opened the field all over the field for everybody.
Yeah. And it was clear, even without putting into fifth gear and not reaching his maximum speed and not wanting to or not being able to, right? Whether it's a combination of both, that he was highly effective just in drawing attention and creating space. And it's no coincidence that the game-winning goal, the only goal of the game, came from the right flank. So Fonzie comes on and he displaces Schaaf. I thought maybe it was Fonzie was going to play inverted, but Fonzie slots in left wing and pushes Schaaf over to the right. He's on his weaker foot, and that's where the cross comes from. And it's a poor clearance by the South African defender, but there's a reason why it came from the right flank and the right channel, because the space was created at that point because everybody was drawn over to Alphonso Davies. And I think, Forrest, what you're talking about with where he's going to play, he's always going to play left wing to me, even against a more formidable opponent, because I think there's just more that you can predict when you're attacking and when you're going to go and when you're going to be required to go at full pace. Whereas if you're defending, there's more responsiveness. It's more reactive. You have to turn in a dime. There might be a pivot involved before you're one, two steps and you're in full flight. So I see him being utilized there, you know, for the duration of this tournament, whether it's one game or maybe beyond. Because like, what was it that Jesse Marsh was criticized for? Because he was criticized by the American media for a lot. He was criticized for the performative nature of the huddle on pitch. And Jesse Marsh said he doesn't give a shit, and I also don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. But he was also criticized.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks. For, I forget the exact turn of phrase that he used for this game, that it's not a gift, or but it's like a one-off or something, like thinking that this is like the last gasp. This is like the last opportunity for Canada. And it is a little bit of a bonus match, right? But like the fact that we're here and it's yet another historic moment for Canada soccer. Like, this is unbelievable that Canada is going to have a crack at a match in a round of 16 versus a team like Morocco or the Dutch. Like, it's incredible. And they might have a chance of surprise because you never know what's going to happen in this type of match at this point.
I'll take penalties.
Yeah. 100%.
I don't know if my heart could handle it. I don't know if I could handle penalties. If it went to penalties... Oh, you could?
As a Dutch, I could. Again, yesterday, okay. I couldn't.
Yeah, I couldn't. I could not watch. Like, I was going to shut the TV off or turn it to golf. Like, I don't know if, and I would have heard a scream or a beep somewhere down my alleyway of someone watching the match. I was pretty nervous about that match. And I was excited, and then I got nervous because I kept remembering what Dub said from yesterday's podcast, that if it was 0-0, yeah. Like Dubs, I'm an active listener. I try my best.
I know you are. I appreciate it.
But when she said, if it goes 0-0 at a halftime, I was like, oh no.
I know.
She jinxed us.
And there we were.
Game jinxed plan. Us.
That was game plan, right? From the off. That was what they wanted.
It really
to do.
Was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it was a thoroughly unenjoyable match. I didn't enjoy a second of it. No, I enjoyed about 2 minutes. I enjoyed 30 seconds of it.
Unenjoyable.
And then realizing there's still 3 minutes left. Like, ah, no. It was not enjoyable at all.
No. And that was nervy. If the rest of the game was nervy, like the 3 minutes following the Eustachio goal, my God, yeah. That was crazy.
Sweaty palms? My ass was sweating. It was brutal. I mean, if I told you guys 6 months ago that Canada would not have Alphonso Davies or Ishmael Kone or Moise Bembido or Promise David for the majority of this tournament, but then the round of 16, you tell me I'm a lying piece of you-know-what. Like, no chance. It's remarkable what they've done. And I don't listen. I've seen people say, oh, but look who they played. Canada. For Christ's sakes, we're 30th in the world.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we set our standards, man. We set our standards. Like, you're going to get that, right? But I mean, there is some truth to it, right? I mean, there was 56 ranked, I guess, 64, and a 60 ranked South Africa. But and we're in the 16. That's never
beat
happened.
We beat them all.
Well, not all of them.
Never. Like, we haven't had to beat anybody yet to get here. Like, anybody in the top 50.
Just stop, Craig. Stop.
But it's true.
We're Canada. It's not like it's Spain with that pathway, right? It's like Spain playing 30th ranked teams, 25th ranked teams, right? We're 30th. So it's a bigger challenge for us to play a team who's 56th in the world than it would be a higher ranked team, obviously. That's math. So and if you look at Argentina's pathway to this World Cup, like if they get to the semi, it's
they get Cabo Verde next.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's what you get with a 48-team World Cup. That should not be a conversation for any team anymore. I'm sick of it. Sorry, Craig. I'm sick of it. we can't be caught up in that. We're in a World Cup last 16. Who cares how we played?
Yeah.
The world's getting smaller. We keep hearing this. The teams are getting tighter and tighter and tighter. There's top players in every team.
Yeah.
So just enjoy it and be proud.
Hey, Sharms, before we get to what's happening today, because I know we're about 5 minutes away from end time, this Zlatan, our Fox analyst, had a really nice thing to say. So it was, for every Canadian player wearing that shirt tonight, remember this feeling. You are no longer just footballers. Excuse me. I'm getting choked up.
Choked up. Yeah. Oh my God. It's not, he's not getting, he's having a heart attack.
He needs the Heimlich.
That was the Heimlich. You were the generation that changed your country's football story forever. Every child who picks up a ball tomorrow will believe because of what you achieved today. I hope it's true. I'm hopeful.
And they say, Jesse went too far.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's with that? Americans talking about performance. Like, performance. I know. Like, are you kidding me? They're all about performance.
Yeah. The great irony, Forrest.
Oh, you know, why are they having such a dig at this guy? I don't get it. I just
even
don't
Troy,
get it.
Troy Deeney, an Englishman's doing it as well on CBS. Like, you know what? You have no idea about Canadian soccer and what a torturous experience it's been over the years.
Yeah.
That we have a guy that actually is proud. Maybe it's a little bit performative, but I actually genuinely believe he's an emotional guy and just gets him down there. This is how I feel.
Yep. And the team recognizes that too. You see Moise Bombido and Mauro Biello just kind of pushing Jesse Marsh away after.
You know, that was great.
That was a pen, by the way. We didn't get into this. I think it was a pen.
Me too.
He gets to the ball. People are like, okay, he gets a touch on the ball. So it should have been a corner, first of all, even though it wasn't a pen, but that's kind of an aside. But in so doing and getting the first touch, he scissors Richie's trail leg. So that has to be taken into consideration. It's not just all about, we've talked about this before. It's not just all about the ball. What's happening before that? So anyway, my point is Jesse Marsh is highly emotional. Some people say he's too emotional to manage, that he has to be like the steady hand, the steady influence for his players on the pitch who are trying to ride the ebbs and flows of the match themselves. But I think the players recognize that Jesse is there to be the hype man, to be the guy that's living the game in full expression on the side of the pitch. So in so doing, the player's complementary emotion is one of calm and composure. Like, it's not just one image of a coach and what they can provide. He is unabashedly himself and maybe a little bit too over the top, like him kissing the badge. I effing loved it. Mm-hmm. But he knows exactly what he's doing, right? Mm-hmm. He's turning the screws to the Americans. He recognizes where he is, right? But he is Canadian. Like, he's American, but he's fully embraced what it means to be Canadian here. And I love it. And before we end, I want to ask you, Forrest, we talked about where you were to watch this game, but what were you feeling when Canada won that game?
Don't start.
Come on.
Come on.
Tell us.
No, I don't want to.
Oh.
were you jealous? It's jealousy, isn't it, Craig? It's jealousy and envy and anger.
No, it's definitely not that. It's definitely not that. No. I mean, it's been an absolute honor covering this, of course, but watching Canada and with a crew here of, I don't know, there's 15 different nationalities, I think, on our crew, including the Dutch, which is going to be interesting. Actually, it's probably more people from Holland, Netherlands than anybody else, but it's super proud to be part of that, and to see what we've done is just I haven't got the words for it to explain it. Special.
Yeah, me too. Summer so of 26,
proud. Summer of 26. It's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. We'll never forget this. It's been just a ride, and it's not over yet.
Yeah.
No matter how it ends,
that sounds right. You know, it will inspire. Like, we're gonna see. It might be 15 years down the road. We're gonna see people that are talking about this team and what it's done. Just like we did with our women's team that have won Olympic gold medals and bronze medals and all that kind of stuff. It's all part of the system and the growth of the game. It's just like you said, it's tangible, and I absolutely believe that's going to happen. Yeah.
If you can't enjoy it, then you probably shouldn't be watching sports. Let's be honest, right? If you want to pick holes in this experience, which some people are, stop watching sports. We're out of time, everyone. That's a lot of fun. Make sure you lay some money on Canada on BetMGM. Make it legendary. Till next time, cheers for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Gregor's legendary.
He is legendary.
Great show.
I think we all, did you all get a little bit misty? Yes.
I want to see him fall. I want to see him fall again.
Yeah. Forrest, I didn't mean to tee it up that way. I just really wanted to hear you on it.
I know. I get it. It's fine. Yeah, it's good.